They have everything to play for because they need to get a win. I think the one thing that you can do to try and affect this game is get to Jared Goff. Get out of this one and get ready for Pittsburgh coming up.
Kirk's history is great there. He's a perfect 7-0 as a starter since joining Minnesota against Detroit. That should be a big help as the team comes back ready for the final push.
You're listening to the Minnesota Vikings podcast. This is episode 122. We've got your usual cast of characters. I'm Tatum Everett. Gabe Henderson is here. Jay Nelson operating the board. But we have a guest and friend of the podcast, Craig Peters, right here in TCO Studios after that rather disappointing trip to San Francisco.
What a missed opportunity. Kind of the story of several games this season with some really good parts and then some really bad parts. That one actually reminded me a couple of years back in Seattle with a just complete disaster of a third quarter. The resiliency that was shown to come back, make it close, fight till the end, still have a couple chances. And then it just comes down to execution. So do like where the team is at with resiliency, with six games to play, but the moral victories don't really do much going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels as if this team, every time they take a step forward, they take two steps back. Or I guess in this case, it was two steps forwards, one step back.
Also, just a knack for getting what you don't need or not getting what you do need. It's kind of incredible, really. So
yeah, I think that that interception kind of hurt us, right? I mean, you want to get some points, but still it's like, like we need a drive right here. I get it, you know, all last week, Mike Zimmer was saying, well, it wouldn't be bad if Kirk took a shot and threw an interception, but, you know, some of those timely interceptions, those are the ones that kind of hurt us.
Yeah, the first play of a drive, actually two turnovers on first plays of drives. I mean, that's just not the way to go against a team that loves to possess the football, bully people, and just get their run game going. Not being able to play possession football, because we even asked Coach Zimmer, and he was like, well, points are always number one, and you know, but after that, you know, against San Francisco, you want to keep the ball.
And it wasn't like our fans were, I mean, we had a lot of fans there, but it was a lot of red there compared to LA. I just like being up in the press box, like when they scored, it got loud in there. Like when we scored in San Francisco, in LA against the Chargers, it got loud for us. So like that momentum swing was tough too.
Yeah. They just felt the surge. I mean, that 8 minute drive plus to close the second quarter just shifted momentum. And you think coming out of halftime, it's 14-14. And I mean, San Francisco's going to get the ball. It's been kind of a mismatch. You've had a couple three and outs against them, a nice interception by Harrison, but then the offense coming right out. And it wasn't even like taking a deep shot or anything. It was just kind of like a simple start the drive throw. And I mean, Kirk owned it. He said it was a bad read. And
it was almost uncharacteristic of him, because I think when you think about Zimmer talking about it's okay for interceptions and taking shots, that's not exactly the shot you see Kirk Cousins taking where he'll get picked off.
And I think part of it, too, was when they asked him about the whole thing, like what happened, he just said he didn't even see the guy slide underneath there. And I think the hard part was like, even just being at home watching it on TV, you see it clear as day from the beginning. You're like, no. And even there is a little bit of a double hitch there when he was going to throw it. Almost like, to me, I just looked at it and it looked like he saw him and then was like, hey, I'm going to try anyways. But for him explaining it, he just said he didn't even see the guy at the time he let the ball go. So it was unfortunate, especially at the location where it happened. It was just an easy punch in for them to really capitalize on it.
Yeah. And you got to give a little bit of credit to the linebacker and the return team too, because I mean, the ball was returned 20 or so yards too, to get it to the two, and you give San Francisco that may, you know, several plays from the two in a row, and it's not going to work out very well for you. They were one of the best in the league at goal to go and red zone as is. So you give them the ball there and you're just kind of asking for trouble.
To that point, I think a lot of fans of teams that are biased forget that the other team, they have guys that get paid too. Like that was just a really good play on the slant route with the linebacker. He wants to buzz out, but he's like, oh, something else is coming inside. So great play by Azeez Alshire.
It kind of reminded me a little bit of how we've heard Nick Vigil or Eric Kendricks talk about squatting down, hiding out of the way to make sure the quarterback doesn't see him, and then popping in right at the same moment. It kind of was reminiscent of that for me, because that's good linebacker play.
I mean, you got to read your keys, and usually when somebody's going out, if a receiver's going out, that means another receiver's coming in. If you're the outside linebacker, it's like, oh, I've seen this plenty of times in my career. I'm just going to wait for the quarterback to make a decision, and boom, Kirk knew it was a mistake, and it came back to bite us. But like you said, Craig, we kind of fought back, tried to figure this thing out, just wasn't enough time on the clock for us to figure it out.
That leads me to my next question, which I hear in these press conferences. Obviously, it's my first season with the team. You guys were here last year in 2020. This is the same exact record at this point last season. But we're hearing so many comments about this team being different. Do you agree with that sentiment, Craig?
I've thought about that a lot.
Pause.
Yes. I've actually been thinking, you know, when you're driving, you're like,
yeah,
huh, well, Vikings have the same results so far, but it does feel different. It looks different. I feel like the confidence that the offense has shown is one of the things that gives reason for belief and bounce back. The just dramatic increases in special teams play. That have been lifts to get you through rough stretches of games. I feel like that's super encouraging. But bottom line, what really got to the defense last year was just losing so many players.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things so far, knock on wood, do whatever superstition you want. We can get into superstitions if we really
crossed.
Want to. But like the final straw last year was Eric Kendricks going down. So as long as you have him, I think you always have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%. EK is the heart and soul of this team. And we saw that after week 11 when the linebacker play, well, some plays that were made by the linebackers 5 or 6 yards down the field, you see EK make some of those plays, you know, in the backfield. So I do think this team is a lot different simply because we have guys coming back versus going on IR. Mike Zimmer earlier this week said that we'll have some of those guys, maybe a Dalvin Tomlinson or Michael Pierce. If Patrick Peterson, good thing, you know, he's doing well, even though, you know, he's on the COVID list right now. He's going to be coming back eventually. So we'll get some of our veterans back at the right times versus last year where we're 5-6. And it's like, we still got these young guys out here who maybe might be their first or their second start. And it's just like, like this doesn't, you go into the game not feeling as confident as you are right now at 5-6 in 2021.
And I do think at 1-5 last year with that start, Coach Zimmer never lost the locker room. The team emptied the bucket to get to 500. This year, it's been a couple games down, really close games, couple games back mm-hmm. up. Now it's an opportunity to go back to 500 for the third time this season. It's crazy to me when we're leaving San Francisco and we haven't been above 500 since we played there in the playoff game. It's just something to, like, between that and that being the last venue the Vikings played at before the pandemic, mm-hmm. it's just kind of like...
With fans, right?
Yeah, 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 with fans and just before all of the disruption that's occurred in the world, you know? And it's just like, I remember... You know, leaving, and I was like, well, San Francisco was the better team in the playoff game. They were built better for that. They won the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball throughout the game. They were on their way to a Super Bowl appearance. I mean, they did the same thing the next week against Green Bay, made it to the Super Bowl, made it interesting in the Super Bowl. So it's, but then they've kind of returned to earth too. I feel like there's a gravitational yeah. pull that returns teams to earth yeah. in the NFL. And it's just always amazing the teams that are able to escape that weight that seems to grab teams and pull them toward the middle of the pack.
Mm. I do think a part of that with the Niners issue was, if you think about all of the names that have left that team, especially offensive defensive line, just the change in the turnover there. I've got a friend who's a giant 49ers nut, and that was kind of their feeling even with that NFC Championship and then Super Bowl appearance that they ended up having, was just kind of like, this is the last hurrah because we're not going to be able to pay all these guys. I know going into this game this week, there was a different feel to it, but the MO is the same with them, with Kyle Shanahan. He wants the ball possession. He wants the time of possession. If there's a turnover, they got to capitalize. And even then, if you really think about it, again, another game where it came down to a final drive with a chance to possibly tie to you know, keep yourself in that game. And we came up short. I think the difference for me with this season has been all of those close games that you've lost, you know, 6 by 24 points. And you're just looking at how many of those games have you said we've been outplayed, and how many of those games have you said we should have found a way to finish it. Mm-hmm. That's where I think this year has been different from last year, where last year it was chalked up to youth and inexperience. Mm-hmm. This year there's a lot more veteran presence in here. And I think the hardest thing with the next stretch coming up here, where we're talking about possibly Tomlinson or Pierce or some of these other guys coming back, you're supposed to hold serve in these next couple of games to try and get some of those players back to make a push, but you still have to get the victory to keep yourself relevant. And I think that's going to be the key moving forward here, not only the next 6 weeks, but especially the next 10 days here with the games coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is the key. Converting these close chances, these missed opportunities into wins. And after coming up short in San Francisco, it just feels like it's time for another vent session. I know that we've kind of gotten a little bit off our chest so far, but I figure we can, for the one last time, talk about the 49ers loss. And Craig, the way that we do this every week is everyone gets 60 seconds of just free airtime for you to just let out all of your worries and troubles. So, Gabe, I'll let you go first. We'll just
we're not starting with the guests this week.
No, no, I want to see how I want to see how you guys do it.
I kind of had a feeling. I started
last week. I want Jay to go first this week.
All right, let's go. Okay, Jay, ready to step up to the plate? Oh man,
set the tone.
3, 2, 1.
For me, the part of the game that I think was the most frustrating was that 4 minute, and I think it was 4 minute and 8 second window where you gave up the 21 points. Not only there was the 8 minute lead up to the punch in right before halftime, but they did get the double dip and the punch in from the Kirk interception. But for me, the hardest part about that was seeing that not only was there a shift in momentum leading up to that point where the Vikings seemed to be in the driver's chair, one of the things that we had talked about for the week leading up to it was saying, make them chase you, don't have to chase them. And we were doing that up until that stretch. And then with the snap of a finger in that short amount of time, you found yourself from being the hunter to the hunted. And that was the part in the game where I was just like, man, this is going to be a complete shift in tone, because they felt like the field was tilting towards what they needed. So for me, that was the key stretch that really was the teeth gnashing and gritting just to try to get through the game.
Ooh, right on time. Jay's always the time master in this exercise. Yeah. He's the artist.
There were no cues there. There was no like a five, no. And there's no warning.
I let you talk until you hear the buzzer and you're like, oh man, that's been a minute. I have that much to complain about. No, I'm kidding.
Didn't have to burn a timeout because the play clock was going down.
No, but Jay, you're right. During that stretch, we only had 3 offensive plays. I mean, that's just killer when you have the defense on the field that much. And we knew that going in. We knew that this team was going to be a time of possession hog, I guess you could say, somebody that would want to hog the ball that much. And we played right into their hand, I feel like. And that's kind of what hurt the most about that.
And that was the control that they wanted to have. And we did everything we could, you know, for the first essentially quarter and a third, just to try to set the tempo of what we needed. And then everyone was just waiting for the just wait until they get one of those drives going. And then what happens after that? And again, there was another chunk of us of even just looking at people online saying, we played an entire half where you feel like you should be up 2 touchdowns, and here we are tied again. And then when they came out at the beginning of the second half and got another score right away, it was just like, man, here we go with this team kind of dictating what they want. And we did what we thought up until the interception and stuff. We did essentially what we thought was right. And here you were still in a dogfight, having to play a second half just to get an outcome.
All right, Gabe.
You ready?
Yeah, yep. Ready for this?
Yeah, let's do this thing.
It's a very seamless process, Craig.
I like it.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
My biggest frustration about this game was not being able to run the ball effectively. Understanding that a team wants to control the time of possession, it just reminded me of the Cleveland Browns game back in week 4, I believe. We knew they wanted to run the ball, control the ball. So it puts more pressure on our defense, well, in our offense in this case, to control the time of possession, not being able to get the ball downhill, only averaging 3 yards per carry. When you play good teams like this, that's not winning football. I get it. We got a quarterback that has the highest interception ratio, interception percentage, but still you want to be able to run the ball against a good defense. We hear all these guys say, well, what about us? Like, this is our team too. Like, they should be focused on us. And I think if you want teams to focus on you a little bit more, you have to establish the run, because that makes an emphasis of, hey, we're out to come get you guys too. So this is another game against the Detroit Lions where we can get that confidence back, but you got to build from last week where you didn't get the ground game going at all.
Oh, that was right on the money.
This is really impressive.
No pressure, Craig.
Seeing maestros at their game. Can I piggyback off of that real
Absolutely.
Quick and just say, yeah, the run game this year, it's been a surprise. Like, that's been the most disappointing component of the Vikings offense, is the run efficiency. Dalvin's 30 yarder, mm-hmm. according to Next Gen stats, he was supposed to get 6 yards off of that. So him squirting through the hole, that's 24 yards of the 39 he got all day.
Just from that, you just say, okay, well, if we can get some chunk yardage like this, there should be more on the ground to come. And granted, I think it was the next drive that Dalvin got hurt on the first play. Mm-hmm. But Alexander Mattison, you look at it and say, okay, well, he's had two games where he's had over 100 yards rushing. We should still be able to run the ball effectively the way we just did on the previous drive. So I don't know if that's because we're down in some of these games or we're trying to take some shots, but it's like, you know, let's get this thing going, because this is still the identity of this team, is running the ball downhill. So We gotta start doing that more effectively for other teams to respect the play action pass or us taking shots.
Sorry, at what point of the season do you say maybe it's not so much the identity of this team?
Well, it still is. Even though our offense right now, we should still, you know, pass the ball to JJ, get that going. But still, to be a good team in the league, the semi-identity of this team has to be to run the ball. And you're not going to win a Super Bowl, or you're not going to make it far in the playoffs if you don't have a good run effect on the game.
Especially as conditions worsen in outdoor venues like Chicago, right. Green Bay. Mm-hmm. Those are the final two roads after this weekend indoors. So.
Yeah, they really, really got a snow, some snow games in there for us.
Yeah, snow, wind.
Wind, yep.
You know, so you while the passing game has been on fire, especially indoors, in Los Angeles, which is kind of indoors, kind of outdoors, I guess, but mm-hmm. there didn't seem to be any elemental factor in that game.
Are there elements, weather elements in California, though?
You don't want to be there when there
sunny.
Are.
There you go.
Because rain, like, delayed the stadium construction for a year, right?
That's true.
So the run game has to be there to some degree, especially if play action passes are going to be at their highest success rate.
Yeah, I think we're 5-1 when we have a running back that runs for at least 80 yards this year, and mm-hmm. then we're 0-5 when they don't.
That just seems so doable for this team, right? Doesn't it feel like that's a number you can reach every game?
You should.
Yeah, that's not even like triple digits, you know? Like
80 yards.
You know, that was the gold standard, yes. right? And now you're saying just get 80.
Just get 80.
Just get 80 and we're in there. I mean, 5-1, that showed you that we can get this thing going
if you run the ball. Yeah,
like JJ's had 100 receiving yards in multiple games. Yeah, still, you know, use the passes to open up the run, but you still got to run the ball.
Yeah. So. All right, Craig.
All right.
You got a minute.
Okay. Well,
I know when you sent your pre-list, it was a little long. So we'll let you go a little longer if you need to get everything off your
chest.
All
right. First of all, I felt the pain of Eric Kendricks just palms upward on the 20-yard run by Deebo Samuel touchdown. He got mugged on the play in broad daylight. No call, no nothing. And Kendricks doesn't complain a lot. It's usually just to the next play. So when you can tell that there's been an injustice is when a guy who doesn't complain mm-hmm. gets vocal about it. There was that one. There was the review process for catches is still murky.
Yikes.
Like, I know Adam caught it. It looked like he caught it on the video board. No call on when pass interference occurred on the KJ Osborne play. I mean, if that's not pass interference, I don't know what is. The ball is clearly not there yet. Contact is made. It affects the catch. The one that got me the most was the hold call against Peterson on Kittle. They run the trick play. It's covered. It's going to be a punt. It's going to be a loss and a punt, and it goes to an automatic first down. Mm. I mean, the stakes of that one are just incredible, pivotal, really, well, because they go on and they march down the field. They keep the ball another 4 minutes, tie the game.
Yeah, that play was huge. So what I'm trying to understand from your vent session is you're really upset with the officiating in the game.
I'm just so perplexed because if it's a hold, it's a hold. And if it's a block in the back, it's a block in the back. And if it's a contact before the ball arrives that affects the catch, it's pass interference. And, yeah. And if it's a trick play and a hold where the tight end throws the cornerback to the ground and really sells it, I mean, you hear about, are the defensive player's eyes right? Well, did the trick play throw off what should have been watched on that play?
Yeah, that's a really good point because that was a trick play, right? Mm-hmm. I forgot about that. And then who was it too? Who threw? Did Jimmy G throw that?
A receiver throwback. And so and Jimmy G took it lateral over to the right side of the offensive formation. They were looking at Kittle first before they threw it. But he initiated the brunt of the contact and sold the call.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like NBA. I'm
soccer.
Not a big NBA fan or soccer. Yeah. I'm sure there's selling of
some
calls
floppy.
In every sport, right? You know, so it's part of the game, right. I guess.
It's always about what the official actually is able to see. What part of that play did he actually get his eyes on?
That's why if the ball's moving here and then it's over there and they really have nothing. The Vikings did such a great job of covering it up, and then they actually ran a similar play on offense, you know, the throwback screen to Dalvin.
Yeah.
That one right there, like the automatic first down on a third in California, fourth in California punt, you know, so.
Yeah.
That was the toughest one for me.
Understandable. Well,
I probably got a flag for going over on time.
You know what? You're okay because I don't think mine's going to be very long because mine was very similar to you guys. I mean, basically, when I feel like we keep hitting this point home about the worst team in the NFL in the final 2 minutes of the first half. So I don't want to keep harping on that, but it really did feel like it was one of those moments where we should be up by 14. This team should be dominant at halftime. This should not be how we were going. And after the trajectory of the last two games, for me, it just was so deflating to see it almost take a step back, not capitalize on the momentum and the opportunity that we had with plenty of teams in the NFC getting losses that could really potentially help the Vikings playoff picture. Although they're not down and out, I do think that the loss just played right into the hands of the 49ers. And I think that was it. You know, I don't think it took a very like elite football mind, as PA likes to say, to know that the factors that like the boxes that we checked or we were talking about last week, you know, don't turn the ball over, control the time of possession, limit penalties, those kinds of things. Don't let them have the ball for that long. I mean, you couldn't check any of those.
Yeah.
And that was frustrating for me.
I remember I tweeted like right before halftime. I was sitting in between PA and Bursich, and I was like, dude, it feels like we should be about 14 right now. And I tweeted it out, and I just seeing the responses, and everybody was like, oh, you figure? Like, yeah, really? So,
But you felt so good about that half for some reason, right until the 8.5 minute drive.
It's just so hard. I feel like this year is just so hard of sustaining momentum.
Yeah.
We've had so many problems doing that. Like, we'll have a good play, or just think about the Kane Wongu kick return. Ryan Ficken always says the special teams unit is the momentum responders. Mm-hmm. So to get her kick return for a touchdown and then miss the extra point, it's just like, man, why can't we just sustain that and actually finish what we got going?
It was one of those moments where you're like, oh no, this is great. But then they get the ball back.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, crud. Like, I think it's great. Sure, the points are good. Like, happy about that. But like, do we really have to give the ball to them again right now? This was so fast.
There wasn't much that their offense did that surprised me. It was more so every time they ran the ball, I was like, oh, shoot. But when they threw the ball or when they did play action passing or when they were in, you know, a longer down a distance, like I felt comfortable with us, with our defense, even though we were kind of depleted on the D-line to stop them. So it was just that momentum.
And it didn't really register completely with me until after the game. And we're on the way back to the hotel and I was talking with Ben Lieber a little bit and he was just describing how Garoppolo works the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. And more than 82% of their pass yards on Sunday were the middle of the field.
Yeah.
Like, he was going into the game, more than half of his pass yards were middle of the field. So it's almost like you know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you looked at Jimmy G's interceptions on film, I could about 90% of those came outside of the hashes and numbers. So mm-hmm. whenever we forced him to throw it downfield, that's where he was not accurate. But you know, some of those deep dig routes, 30-yard ends, 20-yard ends, or checkdowns, he's gonna slice and dice you up.
All right, we need to put this to bed. I feel like this is one of those games where, you know how some of them, you sit there and you're like, oh, well, there's a couple of things we can touch on. But this one, it just felt like it was a lot. But we'll close that book and go to the next chapter because there is an exciting game up ahead. The Vikings look to extend their 9-game win streak over the Lions, but more importantly, keep themselves in the playoff picture. Earlier this year, the good guys walked off with a Greg Joseph field goal, 19-17, too close for comfort, as some would say. But the Lions still winless this season. They do have a tie under their belts. They tied the Steelers, but you know, a lot of close games recently. So we're going to get ready the way we know how. One thing we're excited about and one thing we're nervous for. So Craig, why don't you get us going with the one thing you're excited about in this Lions-Vikings matchup?
This is going to sound silly at first, but I love a noon kickoff, especially with a couple of three primetime games still on the schedule. And that kind of feeds into how well Kirk has been against the Lions. And his numbers in Detroit since joining Minnesota, he's completed more than 70% of passes. He's averaging 332 passing yards a game, and he's thrown 10 touchdowns at Ford Field with zero interceptions. Add that all up, that's a passer rating of 135.1. You know, new head coach, he would always feast on the man-to-man. Like, the Vikings did a great job of finding man-to-man beaters the past 3 years when playing Matt Patricia-led Lions teams. So we'll see what is in store. What Coach Campbell has in mind for trying to slow down the Vikings' passing attack. But the passing conditions are great there. Kirk's history is great there. He's a perfect 7-0 as a starter since joining Minnesota against Detroit. So it's just one of those things where he's just really locked in against the Lions. So that should be a big help as the team comes back and tries to even out that record and get ready for the final push.
Yeah, because after a loss like what you just went through, where you thought the offense had finally found their identity, this could be the game to get them right back to feeling like themselves again, mm-hmm. for sure. All right, Gabe, what are you excited about in the Vikings-Lions game?
I got to say Alexander Mattison, I'll just say that just in particular. Averaging over 104 rushing yards against this team the past two times that we've played him. He's been a starting running back the past two times that we've played him. So I don't wish injuries on anyone, but if Dalvin could sit out any game, I would want this to be the one, because Alexander Mattison has had field days against this Detroit Lions defense. Right now, they are the fourth worst run defense in the NFL, giving up 133 yards per game. So I like my chances on Alexander Mattison on Sunday.
Yeah, so you're saying fantasy owners, if you need a waiver wire pickup this week, Mattison might be...
Take him off your bench.
Yeah, take him off your bench, give the guy a start. He's been really great in games that he starts. Maybe he wasn't as effective coming in as a backup last week, but when he gets the call and he has the reps of the week of practice, knowing that he is the guy that's going to be the starter, he's been a little bit more successful in the game for sure. All right, Jay, what are you most excited for in the Vikings-Lions game?
Piggybacking off what Gabe's talking about, I'm actually going to look at the other guy who's probably going to get some more touches this week. I want to see Kane Wongo out there getting to play in some actual backfield action. I know as a rookie, one of the things you're probably nervous a little bit about is knowing the protections and knowing everything else that goes besides just, you know, handling the rock and getting some rushes. But I want to see what happens if they put him in there. Are they going to potentially use him as a swing pass kind of guy and get him out in space and let him use his speed? But given the fact that you cannot deny what we've seen so far in the kick return game, which is when he gets the ball in his hands and you get him in open space, he is electric. It's so fun to watch. And so I'm hoping that in this game, if Alexander is going to be the main guy, and typically he would be the guy getting the spots to spell Dalvin doing his thing, I'm going to see what happens if they do put Kane in there and just see how he reacts to actual live game action from the backfield. So that's what I'm excited about weekend.
Maybe even steal a couple of plays from that San Francisco playbook that they've used for
Debo. Exactly.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say AJ Rolls. We haven't seen him since the preseason. He had 100 rushing yards against the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm not sure if he'll be active, but
no idea.
Kanewangu, I think he's Kanewangu's backup, but yeah, I want Kane to have a big game too.
I'm one that when we drafted him, you know, there's a text thread that was Corso Siamonson and myself, and they're kind of like, why are we picking this guy? And I'm like, I just want to see, if you think about what does Kansas City do really well, they have a ton of playmakers that have speed that they just get the ball out of Mahomes' hands and get it to these playmakers and just say, make something happen. You know, and it's the speed factor of it. And he's one of our few guys that we have, especially on the offensive side, that is just pure speed. At least that's the way that we look at him currently. Again, I just want to see in live action, what does that look like? You know, he might still need time, but you're not going to know that until you get him out there with live reps happening.
Well, yeah, I mean, Zimmer said this week that the problem with young backs is that they the protection is always the hardest. Understanding their routes, understanding, okay, so if this is the play call, where do I line up? Who's my guy to block if I have to? So I think getting him in there for more of those, like you said, Samuel type plays might be a good way to ease him on into it. Because it's the learning curve. It's the hardest part for rookies.
Yeah, and you also saw Justin Jefferson back there in the backfield against Green Bay too. Uh-huh. And Zimmer said he's not back there for protection. So find the times you don't need him there for protection. I love that you went there with that because that's exactly where my mind was.
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah, let him be a playmaker.
We're not hiding what he's going to be doing, right? Like, right. It's no secret that if he's back there or Justin Jefferson's back there, we're going with that. I love that when he said that. Mm-hmm. I will go with, I'm most excited to see our receivers against this Lions secondary, kind of picking back off of your point, Craig. Last game, the Vikings had 275 passing yards led by Jefferson with 124. I think this group of corners is super young. They do have Amani Uwariye, who's playing a lot better. He has 5 interceptions this season, which is good for the rookie, but I like Jefferson's ability to run routes and win the battle and, you know, those 50-50 balls and the man coverage. So I like that matchup. They also get back rookie cornerback Fidu Melifonwu. I'm sure I totally said that correctly.
You said it better than me.
Sometimes I learned in, you know, my broadcasting days, sometimes if you just say it with confidence and roll right through it, no one will ever know. So that's what I'm going to go with. He was activated off injured reserve. And while he is, you know, he only has 2 games under his belt, so he is, again, not a very experienced corner. Last week, the Lions allowed 317 yards passing and 18 first downs, and that's with Andy Dalton, not how well Kirk Cousins plays against this Lions team on only 1 sack. The Lions were only able to get 1 sack. So I like this the chances for this passing game, for sure. Let's do the next one, which I know, I think all of ours might have kind of similar themes in this one, but we're going to go around and see if that's the case. Craig, what are you most nervous about in this Lions game?
Detroit's ability to hang with opponents and Minnesota's knack for keeping opponents in games has got to give everyone, like, you know, pass the Pepto, right?
Oh, that's good. You need to coin that. I mean, trademark it.
Like, so I'm... Undoubtedly, you know, like no other team has led every opponent by 7, I think, this year. Mm-hmm. But the Vikings are 5-6 because of not either putting the you know, the hammer down and closing out in those, like, I mean, the 5-minute stretch in San Francisco where the 49ers took control of the game. There's got to be like a stretch of games, even when you're leading, even when you're favored to win, where you just take control and say, this is our game to win.
Yeah.
This is not our game to lose. And this is not our game to play not to lose. So I feel like Detroit's been pesky. They've been knocking on the door. You know, the phrase, don't be that guy. There's a phrase, you know, it's kind of like, don't be that team that gives, you know, an 0-10-1 team its first taste of victory. They've been so close. The Vikings should have a very good reminder of what it was like to lead by 10 and nearly lose to Detroit from week 5.
One of the stats, at least looking through their season and trying to figure out why haven't they been able to do anything and how frustrating it's got to be a Lions fan this year. In their 11 games, 5 of them have been within a single score, essentially. And so, like, if you really think about it, including our game and even Baltimore, it took a last-second field goal.
The Bears, the same thing.
It was a last-second field goal with the Santos. Like, all 3 of those games, it's got to be just gut-wrenching. And I guess, you know, to the point you were just making about not being able to put the hammer down, like, this is one of those games, I think, if you can do that early and get a 20-point lead or something, that is a point you will see them start to quit. And I think given how close that first game was, with us. I think that that's something that we're going to try to avoid at all costs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Don't give them hope. They're similar to the Vikings in the fact that they have the fight to stay in games and they mm-hmm. want to get that first win, but you can't give them the hope that this is the week it's going to happen. Gabe, what are you most nervous for?
Our run defense versus their run offense. Even though DeAndre Swift may or may not play, their strong suit is running the ball. Like, they average 4.8 yards per run, which is, I think, the sixth best in the NFL. And we've given up 200-yard rushers twice this season. And the last time we played the Detroit Lions, we had Danielle Hunter, Everson Griffin, and Dalvin Tomlinson as our starting D linemen. Probably none of those four guys will play on Sunday. And that kind of scares me against a team that we know their one good thing that they do this year is run the ball effectively downhill. So if we can stop the run, I don't think it'll be a game that we should lose. But that's easier said than done here in Minnesota.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know you say DeAndre Swift may or may not play, but Jamal Williams is just as good. And if we remember last time we played the Lions, he was their leading rusher. It was by 6 yards, but yeah. You know, apples to apples.
It was only
like
58, but those 58 were hard earned runs.
Right. Well, they rushed for over 100 yards against us, and so yeah, I mean. It's definitely a concern, especially after watching Elijah Mitchell look like, I don't want to make a comparison here, but he just looked like he was playing out of his mind.
Well, you have a team that wants, that you know they're going to run the ball. That does put a lot of pressure on a defense to say, okay, well, we just got to stop this. I mean, 3 yards is a good run for those guys. Like 2 yards is a good run for those guys because they're going to try to make it up on the next play. So that's what San Francisco did, and I'm sure any other team that sees that, watches that film, is going to say, okay, well, we want to run the ball at least 35 times and tell them to stop us. So we got to put our big boy pants on and do it.
All right, Jay, it's time for you to put your big boy pants on and tell us what you're nervous about.
My answer?
Sorry, was that a horrible segue?
No.
Make sure you buckle your belt.
Yep, already there. What makes me nervous about this one? Everything. Everything.
Okay.
Because they're trying to not this have be a quote-unquote trap game, and that they have everything to play for because they need to get a win. Like, they're looking at the rest of their schedule as well and just trying to figure out, like, where are we potentially going to get a win? And knowing how close the first game was, they're looking at us as a team that, like we've all just pointed out, there's vulnerabilities. Our defensive line is not the original one that we were playing with at the beginning of the year. We're talking about no Delvin in this game as well. So we're just looking at a bunch of people having to step up. Now, the one thing we do have is we have Kirk and we have JJ and we have Thielen. But for me, this is the classic trap game in that you're just looking at it as being a complete letdown because everyone's expecting you to win and they are clawing to try to get relevancy for a win for the season and try not to be an 0-for team for the entire 2021 year. So for me, this game, there's everything that I'm nervous about. I think the one thing that you can do to try and affect this game is get to Jared Goff. He's taken 27 sacks so far this season, 6 picks, and he's got an oblique injury he was coming back from in that Bears game. He just does not look right, and I just feel like with that offensive line issues that they have, he is probably still super skittish. So I'm hoping that in this game, defensively, we can try and put some pressure on him, even though it isn't our original front four. But for me, that is where my nervousness comes is, again, like I kind of touched on earlier, do not let them stay into this game. Do not let them feel relevant. Get them to quit midway through the game and just get out of this one and get ready for Pittsburgh coming up the following Thursday.
Yeah, and the trap nature can be magnified when you have a Thursday game too, because coaches are likely to go ahead and start doing some work on the Steelers on Friday before the Lions game is played. And so then are you calling the game you're in cleanly? Are you leading your team through that? Or are you thinking about Thursday?
And a prime example of that actually is something that we've had from our history years ago, which was our first London game. We were playing the Cleveland Browns, who were 0-for at the time. Mm-hmm. That was led by Norv Turner. And basically that Cleveland Browns game, we were going into it going, okay, we just got to get through this one because we're heading to London to play the Steelers. And then we turned around and got smoked by the Cleveland Browns at the end of that game. And you're just walking out of it going, wait, we were supposed to win that. It's the classic thing of do not look ahead to the next opponent. I feel like coming off of a loss in San Francisco, that mentality wise, they won't be doing that. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just another thing setting you up for don't be that team.
Yeah. this is a big game. Like, it's still an NFC opponent. So a win helps our standing, our rankings, and the playoff picture. So Pittsburgh Steelers games, that's big, but still, that's an AFC team, and we still got to beat this team to get there.
For me, it's the next three games, and this is kind of what I'm nervous for, that are so big, because you get through the gauntlet 2-2, like we had said, and then the 49ers was a winnable game. You think if you can go win the next four, and you know, you got the Rams and the Packers, your toughest names still left, teams still left on the schedule. I'm just nervous that I'm kind of like you. I'm nervous this is a trap game just because of the sheer fact that it's building up this magnitude of facing the Lions. They're 0-4. You look ahead. You don't think about it. You think of it as a guaranteed. And you can't always think of it that way. But I'm hoping that mistakes of last game passed, kind of like a Christmas Carol reference, is kind of like creeping in and maybe thinking, you know, they're not as... We have to play above that level. We need to have a dominant performance. And I don't know if we've really had that so far this season from the Vikings, seeing just an absolute total dominant performance. I'm very nervous that if we do not hold them at the end of the second quarter and go into halftime with momentum, that really could be the kiss of death, because if they go into halftime thinking, oh, we're right in it, we're still in it, this could be another blast from the past. Since the bye, the Lions have had a 16-16 tie with the Steelers and two close losses, 13-10 to the Browns, 16-14 to the Bears. So their defense is playing much better. Mm-hmm. I'm just nervous that that's going to be another close game. And, you know, that's always a coin flip for this team.
Yeah, and in that tie, I think they missed an extra point in regulation and a 48-yard field goal. They've kind of had to go through multiple kickers. Riley Patterson is now there. Spent the offseason with the Vikings. But it's kind of one of those things like, oh, man, they lost Hal. You're kind of hoping that maybe they'd already have that taste, but then, like, does that build more confidence, you know? So, like, it's just whatever it is. It all comes down to executing.
Yeah.
Scheming during the week, executing during the game.
The game earlier this year, I think, Jay or Tatum, you might have made the point, like, we played a fairly decent game on defense leading up to, I guess, like, the last 2 minutes of the game. So, I think it's just starting fashion and just finishing. Like, we mm-hmm. still haven't just finished this year outside of
LA. I just want a LA dominant win.
Yeah.
I want to feel comfortable heading into the fourth quarter. I want to feel like, you know, like we had a control for 60 minutes.
So you want to see?
I would take 45. I would take 45 for all out, get out.
So you want to see AJ Rose also?
I don't know about that. Not that I think he's a fabulous person and a great player.
Whatever it takes to get the win.
I get
That's
it.
Also
you know,
true.
I've given up on writing because, you know, one of the first posts immediately after the game is the running gamer. And I've almost given up on writing that the Vikings were ahead. Actually, I've stopped doing the entire lead this season. And Detroit, the first time around, was where I deleted about 10 paragraphs on a moment's notice. And I'm like, so, you know, I'm just like, whatever, we'll get it up as soon as we can. But like this season is just a down to the wire season.
I think Matthew Collar said that earlier this year, right? He just basically said, like, he does so much backspacing, like at towards the end of the game, because it changes so much. So,
Well, speaking of what you're working on, Craig, not to get ahead of ourselves and not talk about what you're doing this week, but you've got a couple of big weeks ahead for Vikings.com with and the playbook with the Steelers game.
It's always exciting the opportunities we get to do some of the content for the playbook game programs. And big thing I'm working on right now is a feature on our Vikings Community Man of the Year. He'll be the NFL Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. It's going to be announced league-wide on December 7th, but been able to do a little bit of work on that, so we're excited to unveil that. Really proud of the player and happy for the recognition. I think it's a super deserving person to receive this. Combine that, so that'll be in that playbook. We'll have primetime purple features. We'll have my cause, my cleats. You know, it's and
got it all,
you know, so it's just super exciting. And Justin Jefferson's on the cover, so that'll be fun.
Fan
too.
Favorite.
Yeah, so
nice.
He's gonna be looking really fly in those primetime purple uniforms. So Eric's got that story good to go. Lindsay's done some great stuff with My Cause, My Cleats. And just excited to bring that home.
I was just going to make a little jab here and say, I mean, Justin Jefferson's always looked great in primetime purple. So.
Yeah,
purple,
absolutely.
I had to get my LSU in there for you.
No, I understand. You
know?
Yeah.
If anyone didn't know, Craig went to Mississippi State. We have a friendly rivalry going on. Gabe, what's going on with the Audible this week?
Eric Kendricks is the guest this week. Nice. He will be talking. Maybe we'll talk about that holding.
Ooh, for sure.
Maybe get his thoughts on that, because that was an interesting call. But he'll be on.
He high roaded it after the game.
He did.
He was just like, they let us play.
you know what he wanted to say.
Yeah. That's not what you were saying, really, in the heat of the moment. But
yeah. So he'll be the guest for this week, and we'll have some fun with that.
Awesome. And Jay, we've got Vikings Vantage this week. What's going on with that?
Detroit native and outspoken Lions critic Ron Johnson will be on the show. It's always fun when it's Lions week with Ron, because he's always very opinionated on what is happening in Detroit. So it'll be fun to have Ron back on the show again this week. So check it out this week on Friday night.
You really can't help but like feel the pain in Ron's voice when he talks about them. And it's almost like it's okay that he says those things about the Lions because of what how he grew up around there. Yeah,
I would just feel bad if he was actually if he grew up a Lions fan. Like I would feel Forrest pain. But the fact that he's hilarious about it, it makes everybody's job better.
It does. Well, this week on Opposing Viewpoints, we will have Fox 2 Detroit's Dan Miller on the show to talk about the Lions matchup with Vikings reporter Eric Smith. And then also Friday Football Feast is headed to Edina. And so I will be there actually this week is my week to go and head out there. And I'm really excited. It should be a lot of fun. Friday Football Feast at Edina on Friday mornings from 9 to noon. Well, this is our chance to get to 500 this weekend and stay in the playoff picture when the Vikings hit the road. Heading to Detroit to face the winless Lions, kickoff is set for noon on CBS. So that is a little bit
cross-flexed
different this week. Make sure.
Crossflex alert. Crossflex alert.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
Well, I mean, you just always used to rely on road conference determining which network. And now they've started cross-flexing the past couple of years to try to have this added flexibility at the end of the season to get certain games on certain time slots.
I was going to say, because CBS for two NFC teams is pretty interesting call. It's usually more of an AFC network.
Maybe on a holiday Thanksgiving type thing. But the cross-flexing is kind of made its way through. And
I did a double take when I saw CBS. So just keep that in mind if you're tuning in, if you're not headed to the game. And that was that nugget of information courtesy of Craig Peters with Vikings.com. Thank you so much for being on the podcast this week. We loved having you.
Oh, it's so great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Well, Craig, you guys stick with Vikings.com and the Vikings app for everything you need to know to get ready for Sunday. Until next week, Skol Vikings.
Today's Minnesota Vikings podcast is brought to you by Lifetime. When you step into Lifetime, you won't just see the difference, you'll feel it. Experience it for yourself. Visit lifetime.life for a complimentary guest pass or stop by a club. Lifetime, the healthy way of life partner of the Minnesota Vikings.